Welcome to the Fit Chicks Chat Podcast, where we talk all things fitness, nutrition, and wellness for women to help you live your healthiest and fiercest life inside and out. And now, your hosts, Laura Jackson and Amanda Quinn.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Fit Chicks Chat. I'm Amanda Quinn, and on today's podcast, I do not have the lovely Laura Jackson with me. Instead, I have the fabulous Laura Lee Jewell. Hi, Laura Lee. How are you?
Hi, Amanda. I'm awesome.
Good. So for everyone who's listening, we are talking about something that is close, like this is like near and dear to my heart, this topic. And a lot of people might be like, what? How can this be so exciting? But it really is. It's something that is really exciting to me and really important, I think. And I know that you feel passionately about this as well. And that is, we are talking about financial wellness, right? And so this is like, this to me is a topic that gets overlooked often by not just women, but people in general. They don't think about how their financial wellness can impact their health and wellness overall. And also they just don't think about what it is that they need to do to set themselves up for success. So that's what Laura Lee and I are going to be talking about today. I'm really excited about this. Now, before we get started, Laura Lee, why don't you tell us a little bit more about you? So introduce yourself, tell us a little bit more about your background, because I know that you have been in this finance sector for many, many years.
I have, Amanda. It's been awesome. And it's been an awesome time. Let me start by saying that I'm one of those lucky people who knew at 4 years old what they wanted to do in life.
And at four? That's crazy.
I know. And we lived in a little town in northwestern Ontario. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't a bank, but on Tuesdays, a bank, the TD Bank, came down from another little town that was a couple hours away, and they set up shop for the day in a little log cabin outside the hotel.
What? So, that's so crazy.
But Tuesdays was like the most important day in the community, right? Because it was bank day.
Oh my God, that's so cool.
And this is 45 years ago. Like, you had to go to the bank for everything. Mm-hmm. So, every Tuesday, it was like, okay, we're going to the bank. And I thought, this is super important. Like, whatever this is, I want to work in a bank. And my dad had a cousin who was a bank manager. And everybody thought he was just, oh yeah, he's a bank manager. That's like super important. So right from that moment, I'm like, I'm going to work in a bank. Yeah. I had like a cash register, one of my first toys. And every game, Monopoly, the game of life, Payday, it's like, I'm the banker. There was no debating it. So that's a long time ago. And when I got into at a high school and I had to do a co-op, and they said, where do you want to do it? Because it took all business-related stuff. And I said, well, in a bank. Like,
you're like, this has been my dream. Like, this is what I got to do. That's so funny.
And you know what, Amanda? They said no. So, yeah, so I went to college, business again, and I had to do a placement. They said, well, where do you want to do it? I said, in a bank. So I must have phoned the bank. Someone in the business society said, oh, my mom works for a bank, Royal Bank, and she knows the guy who hires. Here's his name and number. Well, I must have called him 15 times before he actually talked to me. I want to work in your bank. So anyway, I did. I walked out of the college and I walked into the bank, and it's 30 years later. I'm not still with Royal Bank. I've been 8 years at Bank of Montreal now, but it is still a great career. Mm-hmm. And I was lucky enough to get in on financial counseling and financial planning when it first rolled out across the country. Mm-hmm. Through the Institute of Canadian Bankers. So it's been a long time. I've been accredited as a personal financial planner for 17 years, and I've had a mutual fund license for 29 years, and I guess I'm an associate of the Institute of Canadian Bankers. So it's just
it's very cool.
Yeah, it's just been a fantastic career. So I'm looking forward today to talking more about this financial wellness topic and what it means and how you need to be well financially today.
Mm-hmm. No, for sure. And so why is financial wellness, in your opinion, so important to overall health?
Well, I had to do a little thought process, and financial wellness is, it's a balance between mental, spiritual, and sort of physical aspects of money. And it's having an understanding of your financial situation. It's taking care of it in such a way that you're prepared for changes. So, mm-hmm. You know, with respect to your wellness and health, if you've done all that planning, then all the stress and fear associated with money can sort of be put on the back burner.
Mm-hmm. No, for sure. And I think, I mean, when I think of financial wellness, I think of it from that same perspective, because I think that, you know, we all know, and, you know, for anyone listening, you should know that, like, you know, is one of the biggest factors for people to have poor health. Like overall health, like stress becomes such a, like a monster inside, in the sense of like raising your cortisol levels and decreasing your sleep and seeing, you know, agitation and all those things. Like you, if you become stressed out, it decreases your level of happiness, your level of health overall. Just in general, it will affect you inside and out. And money and financial stress is known to be one of the top factors when it comes to causing stress in people's lives. I know that I've read articles in the past that have said like one of the biggest contributors to a lot of divorces and stuff is actually financial stress, because like, or like arguing over money and things like that. So I think this is, you know, an important topic to know how you can kind of manage it, right?
Right. And we answer really good questions in financial planning. Like questions like, will I be all right financially? Mm-hmm. How long will my money last?
Yeah.
What if I can't work? Like how much income am I going to have, you know, now or in retirement? So having answers to those questions, or at least an idea, you know, really gives you the peace of mind.
Oh man. Yeah. Like I can't even imagine like the question of like, how long will my money last is probably like being an entrepreneur and being somebody who, you know, is planning for my future and for my family's future. But at the same time, like, you know, I don't have all these, like, I think I'm on a good path, but I still don't have these direct answers. So knowing that would definitely give you peace of mind, and knowing where you need to be at will give that peace of mind and that comfort level to be able to say, okay, I can take a step back now. Or, okay, yeah, if I want to, you know, change careers, or if I want to just, you know, work part-time instead of full-time, I can do that now because I have in place. Right. And I think that really what it boils down to.
And we spend a lot of time helping people decide when to retire. Mm-hmm. And it's great, because I've retired with probably hundreds and hundreds of people, or I've been with them through that process.
Yeah.
It's really rewarding.
Yeah, of course. And so what does it mean to you then? Like, because I know we talked about like why it's so important in your overall health, but what does it actually mean to you to be financially well?
So financial wellness, that peace of mind, I mean, sometimes we save people time, sometimes we save people money. More importantly, we give them peace of mind. And you're financially well, I think, when you work with an accredited financial planner and you remove all the fear and stress around money. And we try to make money make sense. It doesn't need to be complicated. Mm-hmm. That's a great feeling overall. And, you know, you're financially well when you have a bit of an action plan around goals, whether, you know, maybe it's a major purchase, maybe a car, a trip, a house, or maybe it's as big as retirement. And retirement can last 30 years nowadays. It's a long time. Mm-hmm. So a little bit of planning, a little bit of work with a professional gets you a plan in place, and you free up your time and energy so that you can dwell on more happy things like your family, your career, fitness, friends. So financially well, I think, is the absence maybe of stress and fear around money.
Right. And so what do you say to any clients that maybe come in to see you and to speak with you about, you know, maybe they do have they want to put a plan in place to say buy a vehicle or buy a home, let's say. And now what do you say to someone who comes into you and says like, I really want to do this, but they're really anxious about money. Like, how do you kind of talk them on that much? Like, what does that process look like for you? Because I know that there's a lot of people listening that probably are going through some sort of like financial distress. And so how do you kind of help them through that process to understand how they can get to a better place?
Well, you can comment on listening, of course. And yes, there's a lot of listening that goes on. And sometimes it's listening to not what they're saying, but what they're not saying. Mm-hmm. And we might do some budgeting work. We might talk about, you know, where does your money come from when, you know, either a paycheck or if you're self-employed, and what's the likelihood that that's going to continue. Mm-hmm. And then where does it go, you know, in your spending habits. And so we talk about people in financial planning need to have the need, they need planning, they need to have mm-hmm. the desire, they want to plan, and they have to have the ability. And the ability speaks to having some money in that you can set aside for a goal. Like I can set aside, you know, I want to buy a car in, you know, 24 months, I'm going to need this much down. I need to set aside X number of dollars a month to reach that goal. Or buy a house, maybe you need 25% down payment or something. Mm-hmm. So when we allocate that money, almost like a payment. It's like, you know, pay yourself first, the original wealthy barber, you know, David Chilton info.
Yeah. Right?
And you just, you set it aside. And then of course we're, you know, where do we put it? We address that too, right? So
right.
Need, desire, and ability are huge. And what's the goal? Where do you want to be? And there's lots of common goals, right? People either want to pay down debt, they want to save for retirement, they want to save for children's education, maybe they want to leave an estate, a legacy. Mm-hmm. Really neat. It's really neat talking to people and finding out what matters to them.
Right. Now that must be really cool to just hear, like, because you have to understand that, like, I mean, you have to hear so many different stories about why people are actually going through this process, right? And,
yes.
And what their big picture is for them, because everyone's got different goals for sure. And so I know that, and because our podcast is for women, so we're going to talk about women specifically now. So how do you see some women struggling with finance and what can they do to correct this? Because I think that's the big thing. It's like, okay, we understand what it means to be financially well, but now how do we correct this? Because we want to make sure that we are maximizing our money, maximizing our time, maximizing our efforts with everything that we do in life.
That's a great question. And I'm fortunate to work for a company that has some really great resources through the BMO Wealth Institute. Mm-hmm. And they address financial planning in women. And they talk about these unique challenges women face in planning. And three of them are women typically have a smaller nest egg to work with because women often earn less. And they also interrupt their employment to be the family caregiver. Mm-hmm. And sometimes those jobs, those careers don't necessarily have the benefits like a pension or so. Smaller nest egg is kind of something that we have to be really conscious of.
Right. And as women in particular. And that's, I mean, hopefully we're working towards the equal pay. I mean, I'll just add that in right now, but yeah.
Exactly.
The women earning less, I think is just like, you know, something that as our generation continues, we will continue to try to work towards that becoming equal pay. But I totally agree with you in terms of like the interruption of employment for family, because, you know, as the main caregivers, oftentimes we are kind of pulled aside from our work and our employment, whether it's, you know, like whether we have the choice or not. It's something that we oftentimes have to if we choose to have a family. So yeah, I can see how that can definitely impact your nest egg for sure.
Yeah. And it's not just kids you have to care for. Sometimes it's aging parents.
Right. No, that's totally true.
Yeah. So, but interesting stat, Amanda, 31% of women are primary breadwinners in their household right now.
Woohoo! I like that. I like that stat. I know I am. I mean, in my soul, my husband's a stay-at-home dad. Like, so we flipped roles, like the traditional roles, I guess, you know, when you think about it from that perspective. My husband is a stay-at-home father. He takes care of our daughter throughout the day, and I'm the one who manages our household.
Yeah, and I think that's
cool.
More common, because right now women own or share ownership in almost half of all small businesses in Canada.
Wow, that's amazing. That's an amazing stat. I had no idea that it was that much, but I'm not surprised though, because I think that women and you know, this is just my like shout out to all women out there, but like I think women are, you know, we're so organized and we're so dedicated to what our cause is, right? Like I think that, not that men aren't, but I think that with women oftentimes, like especially with small businesses, we're often coming from a project of like something that we're super passionate about that we want to share with the rest of the world. And also I think that women own a lot of businesses that they can run from their home, because if they are still taking care of a family, or if they are somewhat you know, responsible for some, you know, for whether it's for children or whether it's, you know, aging parents, as you said, or anything like that, they want to still be able to provide. And so they do that from, so I think that's cool.
And another stat that actually surprised me a little bit was 48% of women who earn more than $100,000 fear becoming financially dependent on someone else.
Hmm.
So that's kind of interesting.
Why that is?
I guess perhaps if you've always had the stability and you've had a career and income, maybe that's just part of your who you are as a makeup, that you don't ever want that to change.
Right.
Yeah. So the other thing, another common challenge other than the smaller nest egg, is like women are living longer.
Mm-hmm.
if a woman reaches 65, she's expected to live to 86. So there's a higher demand for a longer period of time that you need to retirement when you, you know, stop working.
Well, that's cool. I didn't realize. So that's like, so if you actually reach 65, then you're expected to live till 86.
Right.
As a minimum.
Yeah.
Cool. So 65 is kind of like the threshold. That's interesting.
I think so. If you get there, you're good.
That's a really interesting.
And if you're a fit chick, you might even live longer.
Yeah. Everyone should be a fit chick. And we can all live till we're 105.
Well, then we need more money.
Yeah, that is true. We just got to plan better, Laura Lee. That's it.
The other thing that's really, really prevalent is women don't always have the confidence in investing.
Mm-hmm.
More likely to describe their investment style as conservative. And sometimes being too conservative can really jeopardize your ability to reach your goals.
Yeah. That to me stands out as like interesting, because I think that women, but I say women, you know, because again, this is a women's podcast, but I do think that a lot of women, like, especially in traditional worlds, in old, like back in the day, like when I think about like my parents, for example, my mom wasn't involved with any financial decision making whatsoever. My father manage all the finances for the household. My mom's not involved whatsoever. And so she couldn't, like, if I wanted to have a conversation with her about investing, she wouldn't really know what I was talking about, right? Because she was just so far removed from it. And I think that more and more women now are starting to become a little bit more educated in this area. But I feel like this is the one piece that, like, if you want to be financially well, you really have to invest the time and energy, and this is my opinion, in understanding investing and understanding what the risk factors are and understanding how to go about it in a way that can, from longevity standpoint, like for me personally, I am the opposite. I'm not conservative when it comes to my investing. I actually am like a high risk investor. Because I feel as though at my age, if I'm investing in something that is a little bit more of a high risk, yes, it might crash a little bit, but it usually has time to recover by the time I may actually need it for my retirement. That's my thought process on it. So, I mean, obviously if I was older, I would probably want to be more conservative, because then, you know, you don't necessarily have that recovery period time. But for me, it's all about high risk right now, which I don't know if that's like, I'm not giving advice here, people. I'm just telling you my opinion. Laura Lee's the expert. I'm just saying what I do.
Well, I feel like someone must have guided you in that direction at some point, Amanda.
Yeah, well, I did. I had a lot of conversations with some, with different friends of mine who are investors. And then I've also had conversations with my bank. And then I also spoke with our accountant. So I've had a lot of different people over the years, but I always started with high risk from the very beginning. And I read a lot. I read a lot about investing as well.
That's awesome. That's good. And if it works for you, that's good.
Yeah. So, well, that's just it. So let me say that one more time. Anyone that was listening, that was just what I do. That is not right. My professional opinion, because I am not a pro in this area whatsoever. That's why I've got Laura Lee here.
And we ran into all kinds of women who were like you described. They weren't involved in the finances. And, you know, as soon as they become a widow, there's a lot of fear and stress and anxiety affecting their overall health about, and it comes back to those same questions. Am I going to be all right? And how long is my money going to last? Like, mm-hmm. What am I going to do? So it's neat to be able to answer those questions for people.
Yeah, no, for sure. And how do you recommend, like, if women are interested in, sorry, I just want to talk about the investing for a second. Like, if they are interested in learning more about investing, like, what is your recommendation to that? Of course, go to their and speak to someone, but like, what other things would you recommend to them for that?
Well, there's great books. Like you said, read a lot. Mm-hmm. But it depends on your learning style. I mean, you can go to all kinds of seminars. You can ask lots of questions, but just find someone to work with, someone that you trust, someone who has some experience. I mean, someone who maybe, you know, worked through 2008, 2009 when we had, you know, a really bad correction, or someone who worked through the technology bubble from 2000 to 2003.
Mm-hmm.
Because those are real times when markets had some fluctuation, and that gives you a real sense of experience around what emotions are going to do while you're investing. Because that's what we're doing most of the time. We're managing emotions around investments.
Mm-hmm.
People get scared. People panic. And if you had quality investments, you own them in the first place, quality, and you wait it out, and if your time frame is right and the investment is right, then you're going to reach your goals.
Right. For sure.
Those goals, I mean, we talked about this before. Financial planning and wellness planning is for everyone. It's retirement. It's a major purchase. It's paying down debt. It's saving for your kids. Maybe it's just for a trip. But mm-hmm. there's some systematic. I mean, I think years ago, people just put money in an envelope. And that, right? That worked too, yeah. right?
True. I know, you know, strangely enough, I've done that too. Laura and I, when we lived together, we used to like have this jar that we would just like so reckless because we would just put money in this jar in our house, in our pantry, that like every week we would just put money in there, cash in there, literally. And then at the end of the year, we would just count it and be like, how much is there? And then we'd go on trips. I had no idea. Like, and at one point, like there was like thousands of dollars in there. We're like, oh my gosh, like how reckless is that, that we just have like this jar of money in our house? Like, and you know, it's like, I don't know, it was so foolish.
No.
But we were like, you know, we were like younger, but it was easier than going to the bank sometimes.
Right. But that's a form of financial planning. I mean, it's not a formal form, but I think
maybe not the smartest or safest form, but it worked.
I think of some of the things I did, and every payday I would put $10 in an envelope, two of them. I had two children. So yeah. I would put $10 each in an envelope. And then on their birthday, I had money for the birthday party and I had money for the gift.
That's cool. Yeah, but it is really like that, I guess. It's just a matter of like whether you put it in an envelope or whether you put it in a bank account, I guess.
Right.
But if you put it in a bank account, then you could get interest, or if you put it in investment, you could increase your investments. So it's all deciding what's going to work you, I guess.
Yeah. You also see it all the time too, right?
And yeah.
So better not to see it.
That is true.
So I know when my son turned 15, I said, I'm going to put aside $20 every pay for the next year. And on your 16th birthday, I'll have, what, $520 towards your driver's training and you're getting your driver's license.
Right.
So I literally gave him a stack of $20 bills on his birthday. So those are just little things. And, you know, sometimes people have trouble saving. So save in another currency, like save in U.S. dollars. Every payday buy, I don't know, I think over the years I always bought like $25 worth of US money online, you know, and put it in my US bank account. And then when I went to take a trip, I had some US money.
Oh, that's pretty smart. Although the dollar, the Canadian dollar current is just, maybe you want to pause that.
Well,
I know it's low right now. They said it was like the low, when I just went away to the States a month ago, they said it was the lowest. The Canadian dollar was at the lowest it had been in over 10 months or something like that. And I was like, oh, today? Really?
My strategy and the habit is more important than the price.
True. No, that's true. Good point. Agreed.
Yeah. So we talked about what your goals might be, and you know, everybody talks about SMART goals.
Mm-hmm.
And I have my own little acronym for what goals should be. And I think goals should be real.
Okay.
And being realistic, you know, can you do this?
Mm-hmm.
Editable, you know, maybe you need to change your goals. Things happen.
Right.
And achievable, which is kind of like realistic. And livable, like, can you live this out?
Right. Can this actually work with your lifestyle? Is that kind of what you mean by livable as well?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good acronym. Cause I think that sometimes we have big goals, big finance goals, but then it's like, okay, well, like the people that go house poor, right? Like, or something like that, where you're like, okay, great. I bought this house. I was able to afford it. I saved my money for the down payment. I have this home, but now I'm super stressed out because I can barely afford the mortgage payments or my car payments and living it. Like, I'm like, I can't go out and do anything on a social level because all of my paychecks go towards my mortgage. And it's just like, oh, like that feeling has got to be so stressful, right? So then that's the complete opposite of what we're talking about today.
Exactly. So we try to alleviate that, and we try to, you know, forecast, you know, what's this going to look like? You need this today, but what are you going to need in 5 years? When are you going to replace your car if you mm-hmm. have a car? When are you going to, you know, what if you have children? I mean, children are a different financial responsibility. So it's really a bigger bird's eye view kind of your financial journey.
Right. Very cool. And so what would you say to someone who, or what would you say to all of our listeners, I guess, what are top tips in order to get your finances in order? Like, what are like the main things that somebody should do right now that's listening, that's like, okay, I'm going to do this, I'm going to take action, and I'm going to get my ish together and start being more responsible or reducing my stress levels or being financially well. Just, I want to do this. This is important.
Well, we need to work with someone to get to set some goals.
Like, yeah.
Because if you don't know where you're going, you'll never get there.
True. So
work with someone, create some goals and some time frames around the goals. And one of the first tips, honestly, is probably pay off your credit card debt. Super expensive form of credit.
Yes.
There are other choices. I mean, it's great if you use a credit card like it was intended and you pay it off every month, get your loyalty points or whatever you want. But carrying debt on a credit card, super expensive way to do it.
Yeah. You know, the one thing with credit cards, though, that I find really tricky, or not tricky, but I found not so much now, but when I was younger, was the whole thing of like what you were talking about earlier was when you can't see it, you know, and it's kind of like, I would use my credit card and because I would just be using it, but not, I would never like be checking my statements daily or weekly or anything. I would just wait till it came in every month. And I was like, whoa, like I'd always be surprised by it. Cause I'm like, oh, like I didn't realize I was spending so much. So I actually found that for me, credit card debt was one of the hardest things to eliminate because, well, it was easy to eliminate cause I paid it off in that sense, but I had to actually stop using credit cards for a long period of time just because I found that it constantly put me into a cycle of debt because I was like constantly using it too much and not being able to like manage it properly. So I found for me, for my own financial wellness, I just stopped using them altogether and just paid everything with debit or cash.
That's a great strategy.
Yeah.
But world, you need a credit card. Most people need.
Well, yeah, I have credit cards now. Now I'm on top of them. Now I check them weekly. But before that, I was, you know, just a little bit more careless or carefree, let's call it.
Well, and that's fun too, right? And again, this is where we want to do. We want to get to a point where we're not stressing about money.
Yeah.
Then we're financially well. So another tip, though, maximize your tax credits. So, and this is tax time, right? I mean, we just passed the deadline, but
yeah,
this is everything is, you know, should you put money in an RSP for retirement savings? Should you put it in a tax-free savings account for other goals? Or should you do both? Those are great questions to go over with a professional.
Mm-hmm. And what's your opinion on that, though? Do you think that everyone should be investing in both?
I don't think I can give you a generic answer because...
Oh, I guess it depends on everyone's situation. Sorry, that's probably, yeah. I realized the question. I realized my question after, as soon as I said it, I was like, wait, no, that probably wouldn't work for everybody.
There's a place for both. We never had tax-free savings accounts originally. All the only option we had was a retirement savings plan. Mm-hmm. But depending upon what your immediate goals are and your long-term goals, there's a room for both.
Mm-hmm. No, for sure.
Yeah. So you work with your professional. You maximize your tax credits, pay off that credit card debt. And here's a little tip for 2018. Mm-hmm. Make your charitable giving efficient. So get a tax slip.
Right.
You know, it's easy to spend $2 or donate, you know, you want to donate a dollar here. And those are all great programs. They are. I mean, McHappy Day was just yesterday or the day before. And a dollar goes to whatever. That's fine. But every time you have an option, make a donation that gets you a paper or electronic tax slip or a tax receipt for making the donation. Because they do impact your tax return. So if you're going to, you know, if I don't know, depending on where you work, there's kids are raising money, students for all their different fundraisers. And usually in the fine print, it'll say like to get a tax receipt, you have to donate $10 or $20. Donate more and then get the tax slip. It'll save you tax at the end of the year.
No, I agree with that. And now with charitable taxes, do you know, and this might be more of an accounting question, but I feel like there's also like a maximum though that you're able to submit annually. Because I know that I donate quite a bit to charity, and my accountant was like, oh, we're going to have to carry this over till the next year because it won't impact your taxes anymore. And I do because I enjoy giving, but also obviously I submit for tax purposes too.
Yeah, and definitely question for sure.
Yeah.
sometimes it doesn't make sense. Like, just like your accountant said, it doesn't make sense to use it in the current year. You'd be better off to move it forward to a different year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, an accounting question, but
definitely I agree with you though. It's like, you know, you're giving and then you're getting something back at the same time because you're able to submit it with your taxes. So it's kind of a win-win in the situation because you're able to do something that you care about and submit and help out in the world and make impact, but at the same time, help your taxes just a little.
And women are strong givers. Women want to help usually. So that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. And
so my last tip is build an emergency fund.
Right.
Do it. Like I said, do it in US currency. If you have to do it in Canadian, do it in euros if you want to, but you need an emergency fund.
Right. And what does that look like to you? Because I know, like, I mean, I've read in different books and things that, like, some people recommend, like, having, like, 3 months of, like, you know, all of your overall costs set aside so that you just, like, you're set up so that you don't have to worry for, you know, just in case, like, you get laid off or, like, there's a natural disaster or emergency, like, whatever the case may be, like, there are situations that come up in life. And yeah, so would you say it's like 3 months, or do you have a recommendation to what the emergency fund would look like for a person, like, to keep them sort of financially well?
Well, we must have read the same thing, because that's about what I've do. I mean, it's not my personal opinion, but about 3 months. And you know, what's really neat is when I talk to people, everyone has a different idea of what their bank account balance should be.
Right.
Where their comfort zone is.
Mm-hmm.
And those range from nothing. I'll go into overdraft if I have to. They do.
Yeah.
To, you know, I need $5,000 in my bank account at all times, or there are people who need $25,000 in their bank account at all times.
Right.
So I often ask people that, like, what's your comfort level? How much does this account, how much do you need in this account at all times? So would you have, you know, if you needed $25,000 in your bank account and you set aside 3 months, I mean, I guess you'd have an awful lot of money just sitting, not working for you. We'd probably recommend a little different course of action for that, but.
Right. Yeah. Well, because I mean, that's the whole thing, right? Is that you want to, if you are someone who has, you know, has a bigger amount of money that's just kind of sitting in your bank account, you know, if I can recommend anything, I would say, please go speak to somebody about what to do with that money. Because if it's just sitting there and it's not doing anything, you need to make your money work for you, like make it make you money. You know what I mean? Like invest in some way or do something with it. So that, because there's so much of a, there's so many other things you could be doing than just having it in a savings. Yes, if you want to have it as your emergency fund, for sure. But if it gets to a surplus that you maybe don't need, maybe somebody else could help recommend that. Would you agree with me, Laura-Lee?
100%. And saying that, it doesn't mean you have to take any risk.
No.
And as people worry about that. So I kind of tell people, like, you should never rush into an investment. There's no reason that something has to be done quickly. And an investment or a saving strategy should not cause you any stress. Because if it keeps you up at night, you have the wrong solution.
Right. That's a good point.
It's true. And I always say to people, like, if we're going to try this approach, but if this doesn't work, we'll find another one. I mean, that's the beauty of, you know, the resources I have behind me when I sit in my office. You know, we have tons of solutions. Mm-hmm. The right one for everyone.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. That's awesome. Well, thank you so much, Laura-Lee. Do you have anything else you'd like to share with our listeners before we wrap this one up for today?
Well, this has just been awesome. I'm so excited to have been able to talk about this, you know, in a forum like this, because I spend all day talking in my office, but this has a far more reach. So I feel like it's much more helpful.
Yes.
And for financial wellness planning, if we just balance these aspects and we feel confident in the choices we've made, then we're just going to have overall health and wellness around money. I think knowledge is power, and being prepared gives you peace of mind.
Mm-hmm. No, I couldn't agree with you more. I think, you know, I think about this stuff often. And when you approached me to say, like, can we talk about this? I thought, oh my gosh, I can't believe I had never reached out to you before you reached out to me to say, let's talk about this, because I think that everyone needs to know at least some sort of strategy or some sort of idea around how to get financially well, because I'm telling you, for anyone listening, it's like, if you can find a bit more peace in terms of your finances and find some strategy that works for you, it's going to alleviate so much stress in your life and help you on in your bigger picture for your personal, your finances, health, for everything. So please just, you know, if we could say anything, just please just, you know, whether it's make an appointment to go speak to someone or, you know, read books or just start educating yourself in any way you can to help you alleviate some of that stress.
Awesome.
All right. Well, Laura-Lee, thank you so much for your time, for all of your amazing insight. I really appreciate it. You know, I'm probably going to be reaching out to you personally just to talk to you more about some investments and if I'll be all right. And anyways, so for everyone listening, thank you all so much for listening. Thank you for joining us today. And of course, if you want to learn more about FitChicks Academy, check us out on social at FitChicks Academy. And then you can also email us if you have any questions, comments, if you have any topic ideas, info@fitchicks.ca. And then finally, check us out at fitchicksacademy.com for our upcoming fitness and nutrition expert certification programs. If you are interested in becoming certified as a fitness or health coach, check us out there. Thank you again so much, everyone. And we will talk to you again next week. Thank you, Laura-Lee. Have a great day, everyone. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Fit Chicks Chat Podcast. Want more healthy love? Visit www.fitchicks.com for amazing resources, free workouts, recipes, tips, and so much more to help you live your healthiest and fiercest life, inside and out.